Hey everybody, this is Rutledge from TechRaptor.net. I've got Matthew Vernier, Patrick Webb, and Stephen Gillespie with me today. We've got a, action-packed podcast for you. We're going to talk a little bit about the Amazon Fire and a couple of the recent games that came out. We're going to kick it off with Amazon Fire, which is Amazon's new thing, which is huge. I know, Matt, you have one, so maybe if you want to tell us a little bit about it and your experiences so far.
Got the nice little happy box from Amazon. You know, that smile just makes you happy inside. Opened it up. Just a black little box, nothing too big. Very nice and slim, so you won't see it in your entertainment center too much. Popped it on. Waited about 15 minutes for installs and updates initially right out of the box, which annoys me to a degree, but, I mean, it's expected now. You want the latest software updates, so right out of the box it did load it. Very cool thing, though, which I know Amazon does with mostly other products that you buy directly from them. It was preloaded with my account, so I didn't have to do any sort of sign-in or anything. Like, all of my Prime movies and my account, everything was on there. The layout is pretty much tile browsing, very similar to an Xbox look, in my opinion. It's nice and simple. One thing I was really surprised with on how well it worked was the remote and the voice activation. You know, you search, you know, Thor, and literally it takes about 2 seconds and it's there already waiting for you. So I haven't got to play with it as much as I'd like, but first impressions are pretty cool. I mean, we're in an age right now where these streaming boxes, you can kind of just pick and choose, you know. There's so many of them now. Really interested in getting into the games part because with the remote and everything, it seems like they got something different there that I think the other streaming boxes might not have quite yet.
Yeah, because that was going to be my question of just, like, straight away being like, what can you get from this that you can't get elsewhere? And it seems that it's only the game thing, but it doesn't seem so far that, I mean, Amazon have been going to and fro on whether they want to say it's for games or not for games, and they've made some decent purchases. I mean, they've got Clint Hocking, who is a guy that I really like, the guy behind Far Cry 2, which was an interesting game, not a great game, but really interesting. He has good design decisions. He knows games, and like they picked up Double Helix, which have been good recently. But then all this stuff about you hearing the controller is garbage, and the stuff they've shown for it so far doesn't look that interesting, and them saying, well, it's not really a console, you know, it's one of the things. I don't quite know if the game thing's going to sell it.
Yeah, no, I think that's evident, too, because, I mean, you have to buy that controller separately. Which is kind of, I mean, and the HDMI cable, that didn't come with it, right?
No HDMI cable, which I was very surprised at, too.
Surprising.
I figured it was something like that.
Roku was the same way.
Can you see yourself, like, playing games on this, though? Like, someone like you who owns other consoles and a PC and whatever, like, would you want this to be another thing in your house?
You know, why not? If there's the right titles and it's interesting, I mean, I want as many different mediums of devices as I can if it's going to give me a different experience and something that I can't get anywhere else.
But isn't it just locking those things off? It's like, I want to play some Double Helix games because they've been making some good stuff recently, and now I just can't. And it's another thing to fill up my living room with, and more, I have to get now like 5 products if I want to play everything rather than just 4 or 3 or 2 or 1.
Yeah, and I don't know. For a while there, I thought we were kind of going to get away from exclusive titles and things like that, but with the way things are going now, it seems like it's going to be more evident than any other time in the gaming industry. You know, money is just being flooded at these guys. Okay, hey, you know, do an exclusive for us. Well, you know.
They've got Kim Swift as well, haven't they? The person behind the original Portal and, what was that other game that she made with the bouncy stuff? I can't remember what it's called. You know the one. Bouncy things and Quantum Conundrum? Is that what it's called?
Oh, Conundrum, yeah.
Conundrum. See, I knew that. There you go. Facts for you on the Raptorcast.
I think the good thing, though, is that, I mean, you're going to, some of the games that they're getting, like the Minecraft Pocket Edition, they're getting that. So they're going to bring Minecraft, things like Terraria, maybe to, I mean, I forget, how expensive is Fire? What is it?
It's $99.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good value, and it brings some of these great games. Some of them are indie games, but some of them are more popular games. I think they're going to bring them to a wider audience. So it might, I don't know if it's going to be like the main seller. That's probably why they're selling the controller separately. Mm-hmm. But I think it's going to be a good addition to, like you said, they just got Double Helix, so I'm sure they're going to be getting some more developers and things like that, studios. So I think it's I think Amazon's doing it right. It's good. It'll be good.
I don't know, like that point you say about the wider audience. I don't know if that really holds, because who's not playing Minecraft because they're waiting play the Pocket Edition on an Amazon device? Well, that game already has the widest audience.
Say there's, I don't know, like families that can't afford a 360 or a new PC or something like that. They can spend $99 on something like this.
But if they can spend $99 on this, they can buy a netbook that can run Minecraft the actual version of Minecraft, not just the Pocket Edition, which is like not as well touted.
I think a lot of this demographic that I'm talking about isn't really, they're not really into technology. So I think that something like this on like the broader scale, this is, everybody knows Amazon. So I think they're going to bring, this, we'll see. I don't know. That's just my opinion. I think it might catch on. It might not.
Yeah. No, I think there is
a valid point too, though, because there are people that may not, I know that there are probably parents out there that don't want to buy their kids consoles, and this is the closest thing you're going to get to a console, but then the parents actually get something out of it as well in Netflix, Amazon Instant Video, Hulu Plus, Crackle, YouTube, Showtime, only thing it's missing is HBO Go.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is weird.
Yeah. But I guess that might just be a partnership with Roku, who already has that. So.
It seems like a lot, like someone coming in that doesn't quite understand it, and I think they've bought some things which aren't as worthwhile by themselves. Like, Double Helix have made some good games recently, but Double Helix by itself, like, I don't know what you get with that. And just getting Clint Hocking and Kim Swift, I mean, they're great personalities and make great stuff, but I don't know if you're getting that much from those purchases, so to speak.
I think, yeah, I kind of agree with you. I think it may be an afterthought right now. I'm sure they did the streaming of all the Netflix, Crackle, Hulu, all that stuff first, and they're like, all right, we want to. They're looking at Double Helix. I think once they purchase Double Helix, they're probably like, well, we're going to bring some games, see how that works out. I think that's why they're just testing. It might be like a test market. They're testing it separately and see how it works. And then if it does, then they'll probably bring some more on.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. I have nothing else to say on this matter.
I do have a comparison chart that I pulled up off Amazon that I can share as a link in the YouTube video here. And then in the podcast, we'll share it in the description.
If I remember.
Well, I'll remember.
This is me reminding myself. There you go.
I guess my last question is, out of the box, do you think it's a good purchase, Matt?
Yes, but not for me.
That's a great answer. Like, no, but yes.
Not for me.
I think he's going to be happy with it. So, I get, that may change when I get to the gaming section. I doubt it, but it's speedy. But again, there's really nothing on there. So
I don't know. I just don't want another Ouya situation. That's where my fears are.
And that's kind of what it is out of the box. If you look,
but it's a better name, like Amazon. I think you're right that is going to carry an appeal. People are like, I want the Amazon device. So the Ouya is just like, if I'm not into games, I don't know what the Ouya is. If I'm into games, I don't need an Ouya, because why am I playing Android games? I have a PS4 and an Xbox and a PC. Like, it was a weird thing.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. So, if nobody has anything else to say about the Fire, how about we move on a little bit more dedicated to the gaming section?
Yeah.
And because Steven has a giant kickoff with Dark Souls 2.
I want to talk about Dark Souls. Presumably, I don't think any of you guys have played Dark Souls 2, because you don't know how to spend your time properly, apparently, doing lesser things. I don't know. Like, in the time when I've played 80 hours of Dark Souls 2, what have you guys been doing?
Titanfall.
But did you not realize that Dark Souls 2 was out and that Titanfall could wait?
Well, so... That's the thing, is I really, really want to play it, but I'm waiting for the PC version to come out, so...
That is fair enough. That is the only excuse that I'll accept for not playing Dark Souls 2. The only excuse. What are your guys' excuses?
ESO.
Pretty much the same. And ESO, yeah.
Okay, sometimes, you know, you want a McDonald's when there's a...
And
sometimes I want the really nice meal rather than the McDonald's. But okay, if you want your McDonald's, you take that. But yeah, I'm going to just...
Sorry, Bethesda.
Not real Bethesda, anyway. Dark Souls 1 was better than Skyrim, so Dark Souls 2 is going to be better than Poor Man Skyrim. Come on. All right, so... Just making enemies straight away on this podcast.
Poor man's, though, because everybody's complaining about the subscription fees.
It's rich men that want to play Poor Man Skyrim, apparently.
All right.
So I should actually stop insulting games that people like. And
actually,
nobody's listening anymore.
Yeah. Sorry. People like Dark Souls 2. The internet is only Dark Souls 2 at the moment, which is wonderful to see because it's a fantastic game. I wrote a review on it, and there is another post coming on Monday, which is me talking about the end game now that I've put another 20, 30 hours into it. Dark Souls 1, for full disclosure, is, as I've said many times, my favorite game ever, so it's unsurprising that I like Dark Souls 2 a hell of a lot, and I love Demon Souls, and it is... Like, but then again, I am a person who doesn't like iterative sequels very much. I don't like getting more of the same, but with a few tuned-up mechanics, because like, a lot of things, like Borderlands 2, for example, is a game that I enjoyed, but will never hold in as high esteem as the first, because doing something new is more impressive to me, rather than polishing that new thing. It loses the novelty appeal. But what Dark Souls 2 manages to do is it makes enough changes to stand out as something different. The appeal transfers. And though those changes make it a lesser game, they stop it from being as iterative, so therefore I'm kind of glad that it's not as good, because I don't want to just play Dark Souls again. Though I obviously would also play Dark Souls again, as I continue to do. The story setup is pretty much spot on with the previous ones. It's this whole thing, if you go to this new world, yo, dude, get some souls and kill some big things, and maybe there's a story here, just... pay attention and read item descriptions until you work it out. I like that kind of stuff, you know, being forced to work it out for myself. A lot of people may not, and I respect that. If you want to be fed a nice story, I mean, there is the appeal there. I like some exposition as much as the next guy, but I like it when a game gives me back as much as I give in, and that's kind of the Dark Souls mentality through and through, and I like that it's cohesive with that. That everything in Dark Souls and Dark Souls 2 is earned, and if you fully commit yourself to the game, you get the most from it. And as someone that is really into games, it's really nice to have that kind of experience. And it's just really well put together. It still has this best-in-class melee system, which I think is better than any other game I've played. Just the feel of combat in those games is like pretty close to perfect. You know, the lock-on is a bit finicky and can kill you a bit when you shouldn't die. Like, that is minor in the grand scheme of things. This is a huge, wonderful game that... Because so many of what's good about it was good about Dark Souls, it's really easy to say in a sentence, it's great because it's well-made and well-designed, the combat's good, and then focus on what's wrong with it. So take it as read that this game is fantastic, and you should play it, and I love it, but it does have issues. There are some later areas which are the worst thing ever. Any of you guys ever play this game and get to the Shrine of Amana, like, call me up and we'll cry together, because that place is horrible. Like, if you have a game where, like, the main appeal is the melee combat, it is not fun to walk through an area where you're submerged in water so you can't run, where people just spam magic, like, Hadoukens at you when you can't lock onto them from out of range. Like, that isn't enjoyable. And I'm a Dark Souls player. Like, I get off on this masochism stuff, apparently. But that is a step too far. And there are a lot of bosses in this game, like, way more than Dark Souls 1. And a lot of the time you just walk in a room and it's just, oh, it's another dude wearing armor. Oh, it's another dude wearing armor. Oh, and this time it's two dudes wearing armor. At one time, it is three dudes wearing armor, which is, I mean, a step above two and one. But the bosses aren't as standout, and they're a bit repetitive. Some of them are kind of easy, which is disappointing. You walk in, you face a boss, you're like, this is going to be cool. And then he's dead, and you're like, well, that wasn't really Dark Souls. But I'm not going to take up all of you guys' time. there is enough to read about Dark Souls. It's really good. All you guys should play it. It has its problems, but it's so good. It's wonderful. Play it. Prepare to die.
The two new directors, when do you think they did a comparable job? I know you're saying, like, they have two new directors, right? It was a team that did the new one. Did they do, I haven't played it. I haven't even looked at it, so I don't even know. But, Dark Souls was, I think, the level design was well done. I think, combat was well. Is the level design kind of, you know, similar to?
No, that's a really interesting point. That gets to one of the, like, key things which holds this game back from being as good as Dark Souls. The level design is excellent, but it's not designed in the same way as Dark Souls 1, and that's a creative choice, and I respect that. It makes it a different game, but it makes it a lesser game, and I prefer that than the same game. But Dark Souls 1, the beauty of it was that it's a game that's designed entirely around its mechanics. Everything is so cohesive, and it's this wonderful interconnected world where you realize later, like, I can run through this, what seemed like a large open world, in like 30 seconds, and it's one of you like, oh, well, around this door loops this area and this area links to this area. Like, you can get a map on your PC which shows how all the areas fit together, and you're just like, that's really smart. And it was this, like, intricately crafted gem. Because of certain decisions in Dark Souls 2 to make it snappier, like, it loses that. Like, Dark Souls 2 wants to show you a lot of different things, and it wants to keep you moving forwards. It's a lot quicker, you're not grinding as much. And again, it is a cohesive design that builds around that, and one of the things is that you can, halfway through Dark Souls 1, you got the ability to teleport from these bonfire checkpoints to other bonfire checkpoints. In this one, it's from the get-go, which means that they don't have to link their areas together, because you can always just teleport. So there isn't this thing of being like, oh, this links to here and this links to here. It's just, I walked around the corner and this place looks completely different, but how could this ever be here? Oh, what the hell, it looks lovely. I'm going to go kill this armored dude and the second armored dude. But yeah, it feels like a middle ground between Demon Souls and Dark Souls, which is really cool for me, because I feel that Demon Souls is more in need of a sequel than Dark Souls, because Dark Souls is kind of, dare I say, perfect. I mean, it has issues, obviously, but it's so well done. But yeah, there is a difference in design here, which I do think makes it not as good a game, but I like that there's a difference in design.
Cool.
So, yeah, you can check out Steven's review on our website. Like he said, Monday he's got another piece coming out on that, right?
Yep, it's just me saying I hate these two bosses, and I hate the Shrine of Amana, but the rest of this game is great. So if you want to hear me whining but then say it's ultimately good, then read that article.
Okay, and I'll try and put a link, like, right there.
Yay! Steven. So you're a fan of Dark Souls?
Did that not come across? Sorry, I may have forgot to mention. This game's pretty good. You should play them.
This is coming from the two guys that discussed the internet last time.
Yeah. There you go. From the creators of the internet.
I never got around to that. What is that? How's that internet thing been?
It's still here. It's every now and then it's not, which is kind of annoying. It's also, I could link this to Dark Souls. There is internet in that game, too, if I want another 20 minutes of me talking about Dark Souls. We can open that floodgate again.
And don't forget that it's worldwide.
It is, of course.
So let's kind of move over into my current obsession of Elder Scrolls Online. Obviously, this is a game that, you know, I was scared that it was going to turn out like Star Wars The Old Republic, because I was a huge Knights of the Old Republic fan. And Star Wars The Old Republic was, at start, it was good. But it was disappointing at the same time. Like, they did a fantastic job with the single player story throughout.
Yes.
I just feel like the MMO components were lacking.
Exactly.
I agree with you, even though I do love that game. You are correct.
Yeah. I also
do love that game, but I agree with you. Okay.
Yes, you are right. We agree. Carry on.
Carry on.
Every time you say something right, we're going to tell you from now on. Keep going.
Bunch of yes men. Awesome.
Feel free.
But basically, you know, my fear was that it was going to turn out the same way. I played more beta than I played of The Old Republic, at least. I think I got into like 12 of them, or however many there were, but only played maybe 7. A couple of the stress tests, a couple of the full versions. And obviously, I hopped in, and it felt originally like Skyrim with people. Which wasn't a bad thing, you know, and moving around was slow at first and kind of getting used to everything. You have the same options as you did in Skyrim to be first or third person. You kind of highlight your enemies, slash at them, and then you've got abilities as well. And it really changed a lot. Like, the betas I played, you had a starting area, and you would start there and, you know, go through your stuff. In game, you hop in and you have the choice of whether or not you actually want to go through the starting island. Which was very confusing for about 15 minutes while I tried to figure out what to do. Thank God for zone chat, and I'm like, where's the starting island? Like, oh, you gotta do this quest. Okay, whatever. And I did the starting island. And that's after you do, like, the beginning area, where you, like, the tutorial area. If you finish that tutorial area with any character, if you create another one, you can actually skip that. So you don't have to do it again. It automatically levels you up to level 3 and gives you the skill point and the sky shard and everything that you would have gotten from it.
How's your frames per second?
High? I mean, I run it on Ultra. So, I mean, it looks great. Yeah, I've posted a couple screenshots to Facebook.
Yeah, I saw those. They actually look Ultra settings look... The difference between low settings and Ultra is a vast difference. And, like, with MMOs, the only one that I... Like, I played beta, I did stress tests, and I did launch save with Guild Wars 2, and Guild Wars 1, Guild Wars 2. Everything else has been kind of... When I've jumped into it, it's been... patched numerous times, and some of the early going has been, you know, fleshed out. So that's kind of why I'm waiting for ESO. Maybe in a few months I'll jump into it because I love the universe. And I'm kind of actually playing it through you when you post I watch you do your live stream on Twitch and stuff like that. So and it's good to hear. When's your review going to be up? Is it this week or next week?
I'm going to try for this week. I kind of want to play a little bit more before I delve into it, because obviously MMOs are just so massive that I've played for about 24 hours at this point, but I still don't feel like I've fully grasped everything.
Yeah. It's going to take you hundreds of hours, I'm sure, but first impression. I'm excited to hear what all of your first impressions are. So. It's obvious there's controversy of the subscription model and things like that, but overall, it looks like a polished Elder Scrolls game. It looks good.
It is.
The subscription fee is what I think has everybody up in a tizzy. And I what are your thoughts of the subscription fee?
It's $15. Don't go to Starbucks for a day.
Right.
You know, and I was telling that to Matt, so he's laughing. And there's some really cool things in there that I haven't seen with MMOs, and I've played a decent number. You know, most games have mounts. The cool thing about Elder Scrolls, I ordered the Imperial Edition, but the way it works is horses have three characteristics. Speed, it's like resilience, so how many hits you can take before you get knocked off your horse. And then, carrying capacity. And every 24 hours, you can upgrade your horse. So,
real-world horses, too. horses are known to have just the three characteristics.
Yes.
The biological fact.
Characteristics of horses, yes.
The Grand National yesterday, that's all everyone was talking about, was the characteristics that the horses were showing, and their carrying weight.
And it's pretty cool. Because my horse I started off with was just the basic one that you get for pre-ordering the Imperial Edition. And it has 15% speed. Its name is Diamond by default. So
it's an okay horse name. It's not the best.
Not a bad horse name, I guess.
It's decent. It's no Red Rum, but it's up there.
Red Rum. And it's interesting because I started out with 15% speed, 0 carrying, 0 resilience. But you can also... Once you get to, like, 42,000 gold or something, you can buy horses that have varying abilities. or whatever. So one horse might have like 5% speed, but 20 extra bag space.
I think it's a good idea that they start you off with the mount. Most don't, so I think that's a good idea.
Well, to start off with the mount, you have to have pre-ordered the Imperial Edition.
Oh, okay. So what's the level that you get a mount?
Whenever you want, so long as you have 42,000 gold.
Whenever you buy it, okay.
Like, what's gold like in this? Is that a lot?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that could be, like,
it's a decent amount. Most quests give you about 300 to 500, depending on the length and the complexity of the quest. Most enemies drop between 2 and 5 gold.
So don't farm enemies for horses. Right. Is what we've learned.
No. It's, unless you're my friend who figured a great place to farm about 9,000 gold an hour. So I don't know how he figured that out. I haven't bothered to look into it.
Doesn't sound fun.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
The things that really stood out to me were the horse, because that is something I've never really seen before. It's a kind of interesting way to do mounts. And then the abilities, like the way the abilities work is really cool. Basically, you earn a skill point for every level you gain, as well as you find things throughout the world called Sky Shard. And for every 3 Sky Shards you pick up, you get another skill. And the way skill points work is, depending on your class, you have 3 class, I guess you could call them trees. Like, I'm playing the Dragon Knight, so I'm going through the Ardent Fire skill tree there, and so I have like a fire chain that pulls enemies towards me and taunts them because I'm going tank. And then you've got abilities that coincide with armor and weapons. You actually get abilities for guilds, so like Fighter's Guild, Mage's Guild, the Undaunted, which is like the Dungeon Guild.
Is there a Thieves Guild?
The Dark Brotherhood is not in the game yet. I believe they're waiting to release that.
What?
It's either they're waiting or...
Is it because you haven't killed a name yet? Release it on yet? Because that's how you find them.
So is it through each different guild to get their skill tree? So even if you can't say you're too low level to do a quest or something, you can still go get their skill tree at the beginning of the game? Can you do that?
Yeah, but the skills unlock, like, I believe at certain levels still.
Okay.
But you can do the quests pretty much whenever, so long as they're available to you.
And then
almost every city has a guild hall.
Okay. And then is the, like, the story progression, like, the actual story, is it easy, like, will a side quest, like, break you away from the main story easily, or is it fluid, I guess?
I find it to be very fluid. So you've got your main storyline, which I won't really divulge much of, that you follow. Do you move around the world? Side quests, you know how in Elder Scrolls you'd have, like, the solid arrow that would tell you where you're going, and then you have, like, the open arrow
that's filled in, I guess.
Yeah, so the way it works is you're wandering around. Yeah, as you wander around, you'll see side quests kind of popping up, and they're usually in the path that you should be taking to get to either main quests or other side quests. And, I think I go out of my way to complete side quests just because it's kind of cool to learn a little bit more about the world. There are lore books everywhere. There's like 300 lore books that you can find and read. So if you explore, you'll find a lot of stuff like that. Bookshelves, you can actually go over to bookshelves and open them. It'll or blacksmithing or something like that. So that aspect of the Elder Scrolls is still in there, which is really nice.
Yeah, I like the UI is well done, I think, too. That's nice.
Yeah, it's very simplistic. There's no mini-map.
Streamlined.
But the nice thing is, if you do want a mini-map or you want to complexify your... Yeah, there's add-ons. Just like, wow. So, you know, once I get to the point where I need to start raiding, I can get a DPS meter and threat and all that stuff like I had in WoW because I always have loved tanking.
That'll be interesting. Do they have, like, the Wildstar game that's coming out soon? They're doing, like, traditional, like, 40-man raids. Is this in ESO as well? Do they have...
I know there's raids, but I don't know what the sizes are. I haven't really delved into it much. I'm still trying to learn, make sure that I get, like, tanking down. Because that's, I've always loved tanking.
How's the aggro in the game? What's the...
Instead of enemies just kind of chasing you down out of the blue, like, you'll see above their head, like, they'll turn red, and then, like, an eye will flash a couple times, and if it flashes, like, four times or something, then they'll start chasing you. So you can get close enough, they'll notice you, but if you run away, they won't aggro. Hmm. So it's kind of realistic-ish.
Right. Which besides that.
Interesting component. Yeah. So, I mean, overall, I've had and excited about everything that they've done because it has been very good and I have enjoyed it quite a bit. It'll just be interesting to see where things go. I haven't had a chance to try out PvP yet. I was going to possibly try that out later today if I can figure out how to do it. And I haven't really done any dungeons or group stuff yet either. Just been kind of wandering the world and mining. And one cool thing is you can do any of the professions you want. So I can do blacksmithing, I can do clothier, so like armor and stuff. I can do alchemy, and I can do like cooking.
Is alchemy like it is in the main games where you're just like just mixing ingredients together and occasionally making something rad?
Yeah.
I like
it's
that.
Basically the same way.
I'm down with that.
And basically the way it works is, you know, like I'm going the blacksmithing route because I'm heavy armor and all that. And you wander the world and find iron ore, which is actually really hard to spot, which is why there's an ability after a couple levels called Keen Eye that you can upgrade, and then the ore will glow, and you'll actually be able to see it. And then you break that down into bars. You can make stuff. You can break down armor to get bars and abilities. Or not abilities. It's like different types of stone that allows you to basically blacksmith stuff in a certain style. So there's like a stone that's for Nords, for Bretons, and each armor, when you make it, looks different. So that's pretty cool.
Well, cool. I mean, Rutledge, in your opinion... I mean, you could love the game like you are right now, but is there going to be millions of people that are going to love it and still love it with the $15 extra? I mean, I know we talked about this yesterday. I mean, MMOs can be as great as they want to be if they have the support with the monthly fees.
Yeah. And I think it'll be interesting to see, just because a lot of MMOs that we thought were going to stay subscription have gone free-to-play in the last couple years.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say within this year, whether or not it's going to be truly successful, I am seeing in chat that people do like it a lot more than Star Wars, and, you know, want to stick with it. In comparison to the release of The Old Republic, a lot of people were like, well, this is kind of boring, and et cetera, et cetera. So I think it'll be around to stay, especially because it has innovated a bit. It's thrown some stuff in there that, you know, some of us haven't seen before. And they offer kind of a full gameplay experience instead of, you know... Honestly, I thought Star Wars The Old Republic was pretty cookie-cutter to WoW. So,
Agreed. But without this main storyline, which is, I think, well done, everything else was WoW 2.0, really.
Yeah.
Which is frustrating me because I keep... Like, every 3 or 4 months, I try to... reload SWTOR and get back into it because I want to love it, but I can't do it.
I'm the same.
I've done the same thing, yeah.
But with ESO...
Sorry, go ahead.
My apologies. No, you go.
You got it.
All right, so my court. All right, the thing with ESO, and I'm going to bring slight negativity, and I apologize, is that it seems to me that by making an MMO, they're not going to capture like the appeal to me of... the Elder Scrolls games, like, at all. It seems that it's got the combat of an Elder Scrolls game in the world, but the combat, for me, is always the worst bit of the Elder Scrolls games. When I think about my favorite times with Skyrim, let's go to slight Skyrim anecdote times. Like, two things that stick in my mind is when I spent an hour walking around Whiterun, only wearing a dragon mask and boots of major sneaking, and stealing people's keys and replacing them with other keys, because I thought it would be hilarious... to give random people keys to the Dark Brotherhood instead of their house keys. And that's the kind of emergent fun that I like having. And also a long narrative where I finished a quest and this man noticed that I was wearing an Amulet of Mara and was like, yeah, we should hook up and get married. And I'm like, you know what? Maybe we should get married. And then I married him and totally forgot that I'd married him. Bumped into him into a town. He was like, yo, to me, it's your husband. And I was like, sorry, what? I was a man, by the way. And I was like, what are you doing here? And he goes, how about I move in with you? I'm like, yeah, great. You know, we're married. We should move in. You know, this is a proper relationship. And he promised me, and this, I want this on record, that he would have a home-cooked meal for me when I got home. And 20 hours later, I walk in my house, and he's bloody asleep. No home-cooked meal. So obviously I murdered him for his crimes. And I dragged his body down to the fire pit, and I left him there as a message to those people that they should not lie to me in future. And that's the kind of fun that I like to have in an Elder Scrolls game, and that's not going to happen in ESO.
Oh, man.
I don't think you can have that much fun in any other game ever, so.
Well, maybe not, but that kind of stuff is Elder Scrolls for me, just, like, bumming about in the world. Like,
no, I agree.
I'm not that invested in the lore, but I like the atmosphere of it, and the story I can give and take, and the gameplay, the core combat isn't great, but everything else is. I don't know if the... I mean, I'm sure the MMO is great as an MMO. I just don't think it's for me, and that's my issue with it.
When I first played Skyrim, I was like, I was walking down, and after we escaped the dragon, and I was like, wouldn't this be great if this world was populated with people? And then after maybe 10 or 12 hours later, I was like, you know what? I think the single player experience is far more rewarding than having just a bunch of people, you know, with different... with odd names, mining different things, or bumping into them, doing... You know, I think it's... It'll be interesting to see how it evolves. The only thing that I think will give ESO some legs is... and it hasn't really been talked about very much, but the fact that it's going to be on console, on PS4, oh, that might give it some legs. So.
Yeah. And I think it's going to work there, because a lot of people like Skyrim. Skyrim sold insanely. And the people that bought it were the people that bought it for 360 and PS3, really. And those are the people, they've got their Xbox One, they've got their PS4, and they see Elder Scrolls Online. I mean, I love Skyrim, let's play this. I think it's going to have a second life on console. I think it's going to do really well.
I think the PC players are a bit more dedicated, so I think when it goes to console and people see the Elder Scrolls name, I mean, just look at the launch trailer. And the cinematics, I mean, they plugged a lot of money into this, so I think that they think they're gonna, you know, it's going to do well. So, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the game's so long. I mean, we'll see what Rutledge thinks next time. I'm sure he'll still love it. But I'm interested to see how the game continues and if it continues to get better or maybe stays in a rut or whatever. I'm intrigued.
I think I'm going to do a base review, a PvP review, in an in-game review so that I can kind of get all three aspects. And
that's smart.
That'll be over a period of probably a month as I make my way further and further into the game.
So look out for that, listeners and watchers. There's going to be some great content on the site. Keep reloading that page.
Keep it locked here.
Keep it locked to TechRaptor for all your ESO needs. If you have,
let's start a fan site.
If you only have three ESO needs and those are your three needs, then you're going to get all you need here.
But yeah, how about, I know Matt is highly addicted to Titanfall right now, a little late to the podcast because he was, as you can see, he has the Titanfall controller.
Quickly, I'm not doing this, but I just wanted to show you, you guys are into Titanfall. This is, the new, I don't know if you guys, I'm not going to do this for very long, but yeah. So this
like
month,
a Trojan horse, you came on this podcast, you said you talked about games, and then like the horse into Troy, you get your loot crate out, and suddenly it's a loot crate all the time. I admire that.
This is pretty cheap, but it comes with, I don't know if you guys can see,
nice.
A t-shirt and a box and stuff like that. This is I guess March was Titanfall, that was their theme, so... yeah, just check. I got a sweet
magnet. Have you not heard of Dark Souls? Like,
yeah, no, they should have done a Dark Souls. They should have.
I agree.
Titanfall, sorry.
My Dark Souls came with a Dark Souls t-shirt, but it is like three sizes too big for me. That was really annoying.
I guess they were expecting you to be fat. I don't know.
Yeah. Apparently they think I'm extra large where I wear medium t-shirts. Oh, and I was like, well, I guess I can sleep in this.
But yeah, Titanfall, I know, Matt, you're playing it. Patrick, do you have it for PC?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Okay. I have it for PC, and I haven't regened yet, but I have played it quite a bit.
I played the beta on an Xbox One. Can I talk?
It's crazy fast-paced. I mean, games only take like 10 to 15 minutes tops. Love it.
Yeah.
Keep running into this guy called Fox-Eared Asshole, though.
So I guess I'll just throw a few impressions, I guess. The parkouring is a new element, which at first I hated because I sucked at it. But after some time with it, I guess I think I like it. If I get better at it, I think I'll like it some more. I was extremely surprised when I hopped into a game and there were four or five Titans battling and four or five pilots running around and all the creeps are, and everything is so balanced. I'm very surprised that they don't have balance issues. So kudos to Respawn for being. I don't know what they did, how they calculated that, but that was great. And then my only gripe, I guess, is the gun diversity, the weapons. It's not very. They have what, like six or seven?
Seven.
So that and the match diversity. So maybe I think it's I don't know. I guess I kind of I think it's a good appetizer. I think they're going to be able to do some good stuff with it. So, but from what I've played, it's definitely a different. I played a lot of Battlefield. So it's a lot different, and a lot of people are linking it with Call of Duty. It's not like Call of Duty at all. So I think it's a good game.
Not even a little.
Yeah, no, not even.
I haven't played much of it, I admit, but like the core feel of it and of like the infantry combat is very like Call of Duty, and the progression and the speed of it is right that way. Like, and that's not a bad thing. It's got the good bits of Call of Duty and recognizing the appeal of a lot of those mechanics whilst having its own flavor. I think it's very much more akin to a COD than it is a Battlefield, for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely an arena shooter. It's not an open, like Battlefield's open battles and, you know, stuff like that. So it's an arena shooter, so I get the link with Call of Duty there, but I think it's a vastly different game. It's not...
It's a lot of left trigger, right trigger, though, and that, like, that right, snap very, feel is Call of Duty.
Twitch sensitive and stuff like that. So I think it's but the parkouring makes it I think it's a great element to the arena gameplay, and I really like the fact that they do what is it 6-on-6? I think that's
correct.
I think that's a great number, and adding the creeps to the AI, I think that's. At first, I was like, well, I don't understand. You know, I can just come over here and elbow all of these guys and no problem, but I mean, I think it's great to get your Titan timer and your leveling, which I think the Call of Duty and the link with the leveling, I think that's fair. It's kind of similar to, you know, the burn cards are cool. I think it's well done.
And you basically unlock more attachments like scopes and stuff by completing challenges, which is cool. You don't just earn them by leveling. You have to actually accomplish things to be able to unlock Titans or unlock, you know, attachments to guns and stuff like that.
Yeah,
I think I'm like level 15 or something. So I don't, Matt. I don't know if you're like.
I'm have a generation 2 level 40 right now. Almost there. I'm trying to get to generation 3, but I mean, you're talking to a guy who is a single player only, and. For me to be playing this game as much as I am right now, it's mind-blowing to me because, you know, I kind of purchased it out on a limb. Like, all right, you know, let's see what the whole, you know, everyone's raving about. And one of the things that differs from it for me, you know, how Patrick was saying, like, the grunts, you know, he was like, oh, you know, why are these guys in here? I could just double these guys all day. For me, that, like, gave me a little bit of confidence to actually go out there against the rest of the humans, the actual human players. And that's what got me going, because, like, you could get on a roll with these grunts. Yeah, they're terrible at shooting at you, but you get on a roll and you get confidence and you go at it at more of a, a higher pace and really, like, adrenaline. You're like, oh, sweet, I'm on a roll right now. You see one of the other guys coming, you just kick him. Oh, there's a grunt, boo, hack him. You know, it's incredible to me. Just how fast paced it is. You parkour, you know, you get in a Titan, your Titan blows up, you jump, you get on the enemy's Titan, you take out the battery, start shooting that, jump off him, kill a couple pilots on the way, go back, oh, like that, you know, get right back into it. I mean, it's, I can't believe how hooked I am. I mean, I'm just so jacked. It's just so fun to play. And they just did the improved matchmaking beta. They actually went live with it, so now, like, the matchmaking is 10 times better. So you're with people that are on your level. So you're getting challenged every time. So for a while there, you'd go in there, and there was just level one guys, and you were just raping them, you know? So.
Whoa! What game are you playing?
That's the Titanfall version 2.0. That's the one
I don't want to play that.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's fast-paced. It's very quick, which is very... I think it's... I mean, it's... People compare it to different things. It's its own game. And I think, like, the creeps, I think it's, like... When I first started playing it, other than like Dota 2, I didn't know what creeps were really. So, I think it's a good implementation, I think. And, I'm definitely gonna play some more of it when I get done leveling all my guys in Reaper of Souls. So.
Yeah, it seems like a really, really smartly made game, and it's not quite my flavor of game. Like, I really respect and really enjoy it, but I don't see myself getting really invested in it. But it is really well put together. The stuff about the movement, I think, is fantastic. And for me, it just seems like a great foundation for a Titanfall 2, which I think is going to capitalize on a lot of these features and make something special. It is testing the water somewhat. The story stuff seems like a real missed opportunity. And there is an argument to be had that there isn't as much there as there could be. Not many modes, not many guns, not many maps. But it seems like you saw last generation with your like Assassin's Creed 1s and your Mass Effect 1s and Drake's Fortune, whatever. You had these really cool foundation games that then blossomed into beloved franchises. Yeah. And I can see Titanfall going that way. And that's really awesome. Really awesome.
Yeah, it's a good point.
Yeah, definitely with the story, I'd love to know more about this whole conflict. So, Respawn, if you're watching this, please contact me.
Also, I have some beef with this story. So if it's all about, like, scarce resources, right, and they're fighting over who has what, yet they have an infinite supply of giant robots. They seem to be doing fine.
That's all they
have. Do you not take resources? Stop making robots and feed your damn citizens.
Oh, man. That's a very valid point, but since when do video games really make sense?
I don't know. I don't know, Robert. I just don't know.
I mean, come on. If you could have a giant titan or some food, what would
don't
you
bring logic into it.
Giant titan every time.
You know?
Holy grass.
Yeah, your logic.
Yeah, holy grass.
Okay, I understand now. I understand. Why eat and feed your population when they could have mechs?
robots greater than food.
I mean, robots don't need food. There you go. Tick one robots.
Did you guys happen to see IGN's April Fools of Optimus Prime in Titan?
Yes.
It's pretty funny.
That was awesome.
I didn't get that first. I was like, holy crap, what a great DLC. I'm like, oh, man.
Like, Activision must be pissed about this. Just stealing my life. That's so out there, man. You guys are great.
I think that's one of the only good things IGN does is their April Fools.
Hey, I really like their top seven games radars feature, which was really quite hilarious.
There were some good ones this year. I don't know if you saw Blizzard's.
Blizzard had some really good ones.
It was like villains or it was like villains or outcasts of war of. Yeah.
Did you see the Blizzard announcement when they said they're changing the name of the last StarCraft expansion to abbreviate to HOTS because people really like that acronym?
Blizzard always does it right every year.
They're very self-aware. They're clever. And speaking of Blizzard,
WoW, great too.
Ooh, good segue. Yeah.
Patrick, tell me about this Blizzard company.
There's a game that just came out. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's Reaper of Souls. It's
for
the expansion for Diablo 3, and it's pretty good. Yeah.
All right, cool. That's what I have to say.
We'll see you guys later.
All right, folks. We'll be here all night.
Yeah, Reaper of Souls, play it. Or don't. I recommend you do.
So, if you got, I don't know if, I know, Steve, you played Reaper. Have you guys played Reaper?
No, not available on Chrome.
Don't fear the Reaper, guys. Come on.
Have you played it?
No.
Okay. So,
all right, me and Patrick.
I played some Diablo 3. If you know about it, it's a hack and slash dungeon crawler. It's like Path of Exile, obviously.
Wait a minute. I love this disparity you've made where this person knows what Path of Exile is but has no idea what Diablo is.
Like, so, well, it's Path of Exile that's free to play, so I think more people...
but they have to, if they're on Steam, they're getting it. I mean, they know Diablo.
So
I understand. I'm sorry.
So Diablo 3, I think it was well done. My review's up on it. I liked it a lot. I like the whole Diablo franchise, D2 being my favorite. But this new expansion, there are some things wrong with it. I think some of the rune skills aren't well done. The combat, the story. Some of the combat is a bit redundant, the boss battles. But all of this aside, it's not really what Diablo is. Diablo is you kill things to get loot to get better. That's pretty much, it's very simplistic, but it's a hell of a lot of fun. You know, I can't stop. Like, the Crusader class is new. It's a bit more defensive than the other classes. It's analogous to the old Paladin from D2. So, but it's great. I got mine to 70 in a few days. There's different, they've changed up the difficulty settings also, for a lot more challenge. I can't even do Torment yet. I think I've like 5.7 million toughness and like 400 and something thousand damage per second. And I can't even do Torment yet. So, they definitely change it up a lot. The loot drop system is new. It's a 2.0.
It's the one that's in the console system, right?
What's that?
That was the one that was in the console versions, right?
Yep. Yeah. So they were like, okay, this is working on the console. We're going to take it to the PC. They took the auction house down. They've introduced some new game modes. I'm not going to go through the whole spiel. The review's up. But it's my impressions of the game when I first started playing was I was playing a different game than D3. And then they pretty much, the creative director left, the old one, Jay Wilson, left. The new guy came in, changed everything around, and I think it's for the better. I think it's great. What do you think, Steve?
We've both got pieces up on this game. I would really recommend you read the review on it, because it's very much more comprehensive than the thing that I wrote. Mine was more of a companion piece, being like, I also play this, here's what I think. Yeah. And I stand by like all the things that you like about this game. I 100% agree with you. I think it's a very solid expansion. I mean, the inherent issue with it is I don't think that it brings anything good that wasn't already good about Diablo 3, because, I mean, the patch comes out separate to this product. I don't think there's any standout moment that this does that wasn't done in the campaign, and I think, though this act is fun and goes from different places, like, it's visually... I mean, I think the visual variety is pretty decent. Like, there's three large areas with lots of side stuff to do. There isn't really a moment in there that's very standout, apart from maybe that bit when there's on the battering ram was really cool.
Yeah,
it was God of War-esque in its use of scale. My problem was like just kind of the story stuff, and I know that's something you put to the back burner, but with this, because it's shorter, they were very much more in your face with the story stuff, and it was a lot harder to ignore. And it is really quite dumb, and just there's a really interesting conceit of like building up this one boss guy that you're going to fight at the end, and they just totally flunked it. Like, a guy that pops up every hour and just shouts Nephilim isn't particularly scary, and I mean they go through this whole thing of saying nothing can beat death, and it's just like, well, I know that when I get to the end of this game I'm going to click on him and he's going to die, and you're going to find a reason why I can find him, and they do nothing to make it interesting outside of that. But it's fun.
Yeah, well, this is where I think a lot of people have like a misconception is, I mean, you're never, whatever boss you're going to fight, usually in any game you're going to beat, so it's usually...
Hey, you played God of War 2.
Usually.
But what I'm saying is that would make it more interesting, though. If you want to make your conceit, this is a guy you can't kill, there's a great way to hammer that home. Revengeance did it last year, God of War 2 did it. If you have a fight with that guy and you notice he's more powerful, like it's a thing that's used in film, TV, books even. Yeah. And it works. And if you stand that storyline, use that method.
Yeah. This, in D3, I think Diablo was a, he wasn't really a menace.
No.
This new expansion, I think, Matteo, he's the, you know, he's death, pretty much. And I think he's a bit more menacing, but I know I'm gonna kill him anyway, because I have to continue on and get loot. So, the story for Diablo 3, it's fantastical, it's never really well done.
No. Blizzard aren't good at stories in general, really.
Blizzard isn't really known for stories, they're known for gameplay. So, the gameplay is, I think, great. So.
Yeah, I think you're right. It's just, I don't think there's anything inherent to this expansion, apart from it being new content that you can get elsewhere, which is why I think it's a really solid expansion, but I don't think it's pretty special. But if you really like Diablo 3, and you should, because it's great, pick it up, there's more to play.
Yeah, the one thing, if you're just looking for a, to progress, like, the story progression, I wouldn't really buy the expansion. But if you're looking for the new adventure mode, the new Nephilim Rifts, the new character class, I would pick it up for that. And if you do pick it up for that, the story is decent and will get you through. So.
Allegedly.
So let's... Zeros, right? Matt, have you played it? I couldn't remember.
Have I played what?
Ground Zeroes.
Oh, I played that.
Yeah, I played it for about 10 minutes, and then I went back to Titan.
So you beat it, right? You played 10 minutes? You must have beaten that game. Sure, right, guys? Yeah?
Yeah. No, all I can say from a standpoint is visually, I mean, it was very impressive on the PS4. But yeah, it's too engulfed in Titanfall, so, Steven.
My review of it is up on the site. I clearly liked it quite a bit. It's really weird because, like, I've got a lot of friends who are really into Metal Gear because I like to surround myself with people who have similar interests sometimes and talk some Metal Gear with some people. And I feel like I wouldn't instantly tell them to play this game because, like, a lot of the drive of Metal Gear in the past has been the story stuff and seeing Hideo Kojima's crazy inner workings being like, this is weird. Look at this weird thing. And this is, like, there's a bit of story at the beginning and the end, but it's very separated. And this is, it's like a toy. It's a gameplay piece. And here the gameplay is the sell, but luckily the gameplay is super good. And it's short, whatever, but it's really replayable. But it's just this really freeing stealth gameplay, which I think is super well done. And stealth is something that's really hard to do well. And they've made it so stealth is an option, as it should be, that it's kind of fun to fail, but it's also fun to sneak around. And I think it's a really solid, great package. It's nothing special, won't blow your socks off, but it's a great little appetizer of what is to come. However, if you listen to all the audio logs, there is something utterly disgusting in this game, which is handled terribly. And it's putting content in a game which shouldn't be there for no reason but to kind of be talked about. And it's, if you're going to put stuff about, to be blunt, forced rape and paedophilic forced rape, like, do something with it. Like, don't just put an audio log of first-hand account of that happening in. Especially when it's by a guy called Skullface, who has a burnt skull for a face and is like a Bond villain. And this is a series of ridiculous where guys tell you not to press turbo controllers or they'll know, and to plug controllers into other sockets, and guys take poos on battlefields and things. Like, this is a goofy series that deals with some heavy-handed stuff, but very in-your-face about it. It's like, guys, nukes are bad, war is bad.
I think this isn't
the place for that.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. I just think that my impressions were the stealth combat was great. Stealth combat was well done. Visually it looked great. I thought it was kind of a glorified demo. I thought it was they were asking too much for the game. I think it should have been less money. I think only Metal Gear fans should actually play the game. If you're kind of on the fence, I would wait. Maybe it'll be a bundle when the other game comes out. But I feel that Kojima may be trying to do something a bit. He's getting very serious, I think. I don't know if he's going to be too, like, the old stuff, some of the old stuff was a bit cartoony. I think he's going to be getting into some more serious things. So I think he's kind of laying the foundation for that. So maybe, I don't know, we'll see what comes out with the new game. I don't know.
I respect what he's doing, for sure. I just don't know if... I don't think he's handling it very well, and I don't know if he's the right guy for it.
Yeah,
and he still wants to have this goofy thing full of Easter eggs. Like, he's having his cake and eating it, and it's not working for him so far. But we'll see in the main game.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Did not know some of that.
Did not know there was false rape in that game. Now you do.
It's an audio game, too. It's pretty... It's a bit disturbing if you're... The only reason why I even remotely am accepting it is because it's Kojima. We'll see what he does with it.
Maybe it'll have some sort of a tie into the game. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, we'll see with that one. But, like, judging this as the product that it is, because you're paying money for just this, it is out of place and out of context. And it doesn't matter that much if a later game redeems it, because this is the game.
Yep.
All right, well, on a lighter, less rapey note, Goat Simulator's awesome. It's like Tony Hawk with goats.
There's no rape in Goat Simulator.
Yeah. No, I hope there's not any. Although you can sacrifice five people to Satan.
In Goat Simulator?
Yeah.
Are you sure you weren't playing Spelunky?
You get, like, devil horns and stuff. It's funny.
What is it, like $10 or something like that?
$10, yeah. And their key feature of the game are, it's, you can be a goat. Get points for rough. Brag to your friends that you're the alpha goat. It's like, Steam Workshop support, millions of bugs. We're only eliminating the crash bugs. Everything else is hilarious, and we're keeping it. In-game physics, rav out all the time. Seriously, look at that goat's neck. You can be a goat. And that's the key features of the game. Like, and it's true. Like, you're running around and your goat's neck is just flopping around, and you go flying ragdoll. You can lick people and run around with them and slam them into things, and
like goats do.
Yeah, jump on trampolines and headbutt stuff, and it's like Tony Hawk on crack with goats.
With Burnout Crash Mode.
Yeah, basically.
I wonder how much they're going to make on this.
It's like I giggled like a middle schooler for like 3 hours while I was playing it. It's hilarious. And like you like jump off of fans and like go way, way up in the air, and you get points for going really high and doing flips, and there's a water slide you can go down, and like diving, like there's a high dive that you can dive off and then jump onto a trampoline, onto another trampoline, and just keep going around the world.
Sounds like Titanfall.
Yeah. You can go into the game developer's studio and wreck their office.
nice.
It's just I honestly have no idea how to explain it, because it's so ridiculous that it's for $10, it's worth like 5 hours of just goofing around. And they're going to apparently add more, like, goat.
More goat.
Goats. Goat adds any
time.
More. Needs more.
Game has more goat.
More goat.
Needs more goat.
Season 2,
Goat Simulator 2, more goat.
Well, I'll have to tweet that at the developer.
yeah, you may have started something now. More goat. Hashtag
more goat. More goat.
More goat.
That's like the Super Street Fighter of this.
I will tweet that to them right now.
It's brilliant.
It's probably one of the most ridiculously fun games. And the launch trailer that they made for it was
I saw that.
It was like Dead Island.
Yeah, it's pretty epic.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen that, it's
like a backwards goat going through a goat.
That long trailer for Goat Simulator.
Like,
it's pretty good.
The goat like wakes up like on the ground, and it's just awesome.
Hey,
I like how new that all is. That's brilliant.
So I'm past my time. I have to get going.
Well, we're pretty much done at this point. I just wanted to plug Goat Simulator because it's freaking awesome.
What would be cool, I think, maybe is each of us kind of say our, like, most anticipated game for the year. So I will go first. It's kind of technically this year. It was supposed to be this year. It's going to be February of next year, but it's for this year. favorite. So I'm still counting it as this year because it's supposed to be this year, but that's mine. Witcher 2. Witcher 3, I'm sorry.
I'm going to have to say Destiny.
Oh, good choice.
Good pick.
Jacked. Matt?
You know, I got to go with my most anticipated launch title for PS4 as Watch Dogs.
It's going to be the best launch title.
Yeah, the best launch title that didn't happen, but it's almost here.
Did you see the PC requirements that came out yesterday?
Yeah. That's a hefty PC requirement.
Minimum 8 core processor, minimum 8 gigs RAM, and I think it was minimum 1 gig of graphical
RAM.
Dedicated video?
Dedicated video. Yeah.
Okay.
That's insane.
Hopefully it looks
not many people are going to be able to play it on their PC.
Yeah, it's probably not going to look that good if those are the requirements, you know. It'll probably just be a last-gen game.
It's going to be probably like 2D top-down, I'm expecting.
Just really high resolution.
Area.
Like really good sprites. I'm expecting amazing sprites. The best sprites you've ever seen. FMV backgrounds, just video, HD video in the background at all points.
And some dogs that watch you. Obviously. But what did you say yours was, Steven?
I didn't. Dark Souls 2 came out already, didn't it?
Oh. Yeah.
The Dark Souls 2 came out, leaving a void.
Yeah,
For me, it's... I guess I'm going to skip out on Persona because that's not going to come out this year in this country.
Yeah.
Or your country, your fine nation. So I'm going to say Dragon Age. Dragon Age Origins is, like, the best. And Dragon Age 2 is, like, not the best.
Yeah,
and I have some... Dragon Age Inquisition is not going to be an uninteresting game. And for that reason, I have to play it. Even if it's just, like, a fabulous train wreck. It's going to be fascinating. I want to be all over it.
Agreed. I think that I have the Dragon Age Inquisition and the Division are my two second.
How about the Division?
Yeah, Division's going to be very interesting.
Yep.
It's going to be a good. I think it's going to be a very good year for gaming.
Divisive, perhaps.
Divisive. So yeah, those are our top ones. Obviously, if people haven't seen our top 10 most anticipated games, check out our site.
Dark Souls 2 PC.
Oh, Lord.
Well, just,
wow.
I managed it.
We should have seen that coming. Yeah, so if you haven't seen our top 10 most anticipated games for the year, check us out at techraptor.net. I got to plug our new site. If you're into tabletops, comics.
Movies.
Movies, TV shows. Steven just started a Real Raptors podcast where he talks about movies. If you're into anime, we're gradually getting into that.
That's a good one. Listen to it.
Yeah. So, we're jacked about this year, obviously. Patrick just dropped out because he's got to go. With that, we should have another podcast up in about 2 weeks, hopefully. If things go as planned and we can get another one up. But we'd like to try and start doing these twice a month.
Yeah.
So just make sure you follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Tumblr. We're up on Podbean.
Follow me in person if you find me. Just
find him on Dark Souls.
Yeah, if you get invaded or want to summon a guy called Steven,
you're probably...
Just do it. You won't regret it.
Dark Souls than you are in real life. Because he's probably playing Dark Souls.
Right now, actually, behind my back.
Because why go outside when you can play Dark Souls?
There you go, and that's where we're going by. Alright. Are we done?
So, with that, we're signing off. And
we'll let Patrick have the last word.